This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly sponsored by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. As a City supporter, we know you value delivery, and McDelivery is up there with the very best. You'll always be winning with McDelivery because just like Kevin De Bruyne, McDelivery puts your order right on a plate. So the only thing left to say is, are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered as well. So that ordering today means some tasty rewards for you tomorrow. Only via the app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Easter Sunday and the return of Jesus. Welcome to the Rest is History podcast. April Fools. The return of Jesus that we were treated to heralded nothing but a bore draw and a potentially fatal result for City's title race. It's Monday the 1st of April. I'm your host, Ollie Kirsch.
And I'm Alex Brotherton.
And this is the City Report podcast.
It's here for Gundogan! It is a thrilling start for Manchester City. The fastest ever goal in an FA Cup final. 2023 is the City treble year. Champions of England, FA Cup winners, and now Champions of Europe! Manchester City are kings of Europe! Now they have their triple crown!
So, Alex, that was about as dead as my intro, right? I'm not really sure what to say about that. I think that intro kind of reflects the mood, in a sense. Whelmed, underwhelmed, frustrated, regretful at what this might mean for the rest of City's Premier League season, at least. And it caps off really what's been quite a poor season in terms of home results in big games. So look, we'll start with a bit of an open floor here. What did you make of it?
Yeah, it wasn't by any means a classic, was it? I think, to be honest, I was kind of expecting that sort of game. I didn't think we were there was a lot of build up, you know, two teams in the title race. People were expecting a sort of a thrilling match. There was talk of it being like the best match of the season, but I think we've seen before City and Arsenal games, particularly earlier this season, even the ones last season, you didn't get two teams playing their style, playing, you know, at the top of their game like you often get when City and Liverpool go head to head. You know, and I think that was the same again today. I guess we'll go into why that is, the hows and whys. But yeah, it was similar to the game at the Emirates earlier in the season where City weren't sort of at their sharpest. Obviously, City were the better team today, which you couldn't have said at the Emirates a few months ago. But yeah, it was, you know, Arsenal clearly set up to try and sort of stifle City, frustrate them, stay solid, which they did very well. To be fair to them, that was the game plan and they did it really well. And then it was just a case of City, you know, trying to pass side to side, create an opening eventually, but it just didn't really come. And in those games, you kind of need your individuals to, you know, come up with a moment of genius, and that didn't really happen either. So, yeah, I guess maybe on another day, you know, maybe Nathan Ake makes a better connection with that chance he had. Maybe they get the rub of the green somewhere else. But at the end of the day, it wasn't the best performance from City, but not by no means awful, I don't think. But yeah, it didn't make for an entertaining spectacle at all.
I think you make an interesting point about relying on individuals and big moments in games like that, because something I said to my dad maybe about around the hour mark while we're at the game was, this is the kind of game where you're relying on a Bernardo pirouette, a Foden pirouette, a Rodri screamer, and it just felt like we needed it because we weren't potent enough. And we'll get into that very shortly, but I do want to delve into something straight away that you mentioned, which was how Arsenal set up, how Arsenal played. I've seen a video before, AFTV celebrating the final whistle. Amos himself, who's drowning in sorrows somewhere in Stockport tonight, he tweeted out Arsenal's average position as well. I thought the same as you, right? Coming into the game, I thought this was going to be a rip-roaring, high-scoring game. I had maybe 3-2 City, 3-1 City, 4-2 City. I thought we were in for a treat today, and I'm a bit perplexed. I'm perplexed at two things. One, how Arsenal set up and how they were willing to take a point from this game, and the reaction of the Arsenal fans happy about it. I mean, I said tongue-in-cheek when I tweeted, you can tell it's been 20 years since they won the title because they're happy about surrendering control in a title race, but it is baffling. I cannot get my head around how Arsenal set up. And this isn't an Arsenal-only conversation here. This is just, I can't get my head around how this played out today. It was, I don't know about you, but it was not what I was expecting to see at all when I got to the Etihad earlier on.
I mean, I kind of was expecting a tight game, especially, you know, when with the issues we knew City were going to have going into it, no Walker, obviously no Stones. Yeah, he was on the bench, but he clearly wasn't fit enough to play any part. So I wasn't expecting sort of City at their fluid best. There was always going to be issues in the build-up, which I thought, you know, bringing Kovacic in really kind of helped with that, to be fair. But in terms of Arsenal's approach, I think maybe I expected them to go for it a bit more, be a bit more expansive than they were. But I can kind of see both sides. I can see where you're coming from in terms of surprise at the Arsenal fans. Well, I don't know. I guess if you see it as a one-off game, I think they've got every right to be pretty pleased with how they played. You know, they on another day, they might, Gabriel Jesus might get his toe on the end of that cross they had that counter-attack kind of towards, I think it was in the final 15 minutes. And if that goes in and then we're sat here talking about, you know, an all-time great away performance at the Champions and Arsenal have nicked the result and are now in pole position in the title race. But so I think, you know, they should take credit and they should be pretty pleased with how they defended and how they really did something that nobody can ever really do, which is stop City scoring. You know, City had scored in 57 straight home games before today. So that is an achievement. But then when you take it in the context of the title race, if I was an Arsenal fan, I don't think I'd be, you know, really buzzing about it, because from a City point of view, I think all three teams are going to drop points between now and the last day of the season. And if I'm an Arsenal fan, I'm thinking, well, I can see City dropping points, but we're already ahead of them now. I can see Liverpool dropping points, but are Arsenal really going to win all their remaining 9 games? I don't really see that. So, yeah, I feel like I wouldn't be upset if I was an Arsenal fan, but yeah, maybe don't want to go all celebration police, but it seems like a weird thing to really sort of celebrate too much. But I don't know. I wasn't completely surprised by Arsenal's approach, but I did think they were maybe going to be a bit more expansive. But then, you know, they've clearly learned from the two league games last season where they were a lot more expansive. They had more of a go and City did them by, for want of a better phrase, going a bit route one, going over the press, playing into the space, and they got ripped apart by Haaland and De Bruyne. So they didn't let that happen today. Yes, they kind of sacrificed their own threat, but, you know, they didn't lose. They're still above City in the table. Now they've just got to hope, like City, that Liverpool drop points, which I think is entirely possible. So, yeah, I think they could have given more, but I wasn't hugely surprised by what they did do.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to have a chat about the wider impact on the title race in the second half of the show, but the most important issues, I know this is a review, but the most important issues tend to find their way to the front of the show, right? And that's on the forefront of everyone's mind right now. So the wider title race, and just by the way, yeah, on the performance, it's funny because we've got some slightly differing views here. I'm disappointed. in Arsenal. I'm disappointed that we didn't get... I still thought maybe it'd be a tight game, but I thought we would get goals. I thought it would be two teams really trying to pick up that 3 points, which it wasn't. So I'm disappointed. You can see both sides of it. You can understand why Arsenal might be fairly content. Amos is not here tonight, but I know it is something that he wanted to say. He thought it was poor per his tweet and embarrassing. So there's a range of opinions on how Arsenal approached the game. But yeah, celebration is bizarre. The broader title race then, Alex, we'll do this podcast a little bit back to front. The broader title race, my perspective is, I agree. I don't think any team is going to win out of the three. But that's problematic for us because if you take the goal difference into account, we're 4 points behind, right? 3 points plus a goal difference, it's going to be fairly tough to turn around. Arsenal, a couple of points behind. Liverpool look like they're in a good spot. Liverpool as well don't really have that many tough games to go. I think maybe United away is looking like their toughest fixture left. Maybe Villa. I'm probably giving United too much credit there. So, and also we've got Spurs away. Are you losing hope? Because I am.
I'm not. Yeah, I feel like there's no obvious signs that have. Well, it's a tricky one, isn't it? Because this time last year, earlier than this, we were saying there's no obvious signs that City are going to go on one of their runs and just sort of reel the challenger in and then go on a run and just win out and sort of win the title at a canter. But and then obviously it happened. But this season, I don't know, maybe the fact that there is two challengers and it would now require both of them to have a wobble at the same time, which just kind of seems a bit unlikely. And the fact that, you know, there's now 9 games left and City, you know, I don't think at any point this season they've sunk to the levels that they were at in January 2023 when a treble seemed completely impossible. But I think they had picked up the pace a bit by now at this time last year. And it's not really looking as fluid and as things aren't clicking like they were. And I think as much as we do sometimes slate Kyle Walker, I think, you know, he does give his availability, gives Guardiola more options when he wants to like change the tactics, change the build up in a certain game. So not having him for the next few weeks, it looks like he said in his post-match interview that the Walker's going to be out for longer than Stones, obviously, because Stones are on the bench today. But I think, yeah, I wouldn't say a losing hope because, as I said, and as you agree, I think Arsenal and Liverpool are more than capable of dropping points. But it's just more about, I'm not sure I see City winning all their games, which, you know, even if Liverpool lose one game, then City are going to have to win all of them. And then obviously overturn the goal difference, which isn't going to be easy against Liverpool. And then, yeah, the Spurs away, obviously. They ended the Spurs away hoodoo in the Cup back in January, but is it going to happen in the league? Spurs have kind of got over their injury crisis that they had at that time. Now Villa on Wednesday is going to be difficult. But yeah, if there's anyone that can put a run together, it is City. But maybe we should be more confident given what they've done in the past, but football's not played on what's happened in the past. It's it's on what's happening now and how everyone else is doing. And at the minute, it would take quite a few things to go in City's favour, and then obviously pretty much flawless running. So I wouldn't say, you know, some people from this parish have said in the group chat that it's completely 99% impossible that City are gonna pull it off. I'm not that pessimistic, but I wouldn't say I'm overly confident either.
Yeah, I agree. It's not an impossible task. We absolutely do have the quality to put that winning run together. Our ceiling, if you go on any given day ceiling, we are still the best team in the league. You know, if every team plays to its maximum potential on any given day, there's no doubt that we can do the most damage. The problem is that even if Liverpool do drop the 4 points that we would need them to, I just don't see us winning out at all. So if we're going to drop points in a couple of games, that means we might need Liverpool to drop points in 3 or 4 games. That's where the problem lies. The problem for me is in the starting position. And that consistency is echoed by our results against the big six at home. Liverpool, drawn 1-1. Spurs, we drew 3-3. Chelsea, drew 1-1. United, we beat. Arsenal, 0-0. You've got to pick up the points against the big boys, especially at home. You can afford draws away. You can even afford the odd loss away. You know, we usually do lose at Spurs, lose at Anfield. I just don't think you can expect to beat your title rivals to the title if you can't do the job at your own ground. And that, I think, is historically what we've done. We've picked up more points than them. From the two fixtures against them, we've always picked up more points than our title rivals, and we've just failed to do it this time.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think it's kind of like you can draw. Obviously, it's completely different, but you know, it's the same when people talk about the teams that end up going down. It's you know, if you're in a relegation battle, it's the teams around you that you know you got to beat, and it's the same with the title race. It's like City, Arsenal, Liverpool. They're all gonna, you know, most of the time they're going to be beating the teams in mid-table and down at the bottom, but the big ones are when you play each other. And obviously the City's record against the top five, top six this year has been, by their standards, abysmal, I'd say. By their standards, I must stress. So, yeah, can't really. If it gets to the 19th of May and City are already out of the picture or they end up don't winning it on the final day, that record is probably going to be looked back on, and in preparation for next season, that's going to be something they need to work on. And, you know, this comes, maybe it's just a sign of, you know, how incredible City's achievements in recent years have been, because, you know, it's fine margins decide these games. And it's, you know, to City's credit, really, that, you know, most of the time over the last 5 years, they have, you know, they've come out on top in these fine margin games, bar the obvious caveats of the away trips at Spurs and Anfield. But as you said, at home, they have really made the Etihad a bit of a fortress, to use a footballing cliche. But yeah, it's just not really been the case this season, which I think, you know, could be pivotal in the end.
Frustrating, very frustrating. There's a secondary concern here, and I don't want to jump the gun. But I guess just one for you to think about, one for the listeners to think about, really. Not having consistency is one thing. When you don't have consistency, but you do have a high ceiling, then you have some faith in your ability to at least win a cup or two. FA Cup, Champions League, perhaps, which, of course, we're absolutely still in. We're in the final stages of both. But then again, the fact that we have struggled to turn up in the big games, home and away, hard to say what's going to happen. As I said, just a secondary concern I want to think about. But for me personally, I'm quite concerned about the fact that the lads haven't been able to get themselves up and over the line in these bigger fixtures. So anyway, we'll go for a little break right there. Don't go anywhere. And in the second half, we will have a look at the performance and just try and get a handle on what went wrong, what needs to improve, and which players perhaps shouldn't be seeing the pitch again for the rest of the season, but we'll get to that. Stay tuned.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The Etihad Stadium really is wonderful at this time of the season, and the same goes for McDelivery. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome back to the City Report podcast, your home for daily Manchester City content. So, Alex, we have gone a bit back to front on this, but let's talk about the performance itself. It was, frustrating. We have to remember this, that we've played in the context of Arsenal being, firstly, the highest scoring team in the league so far this season, and the team with the best defensive record in the league this season. Gabriel and Saliba have been fantastic, and quite frankly, we didn't really have much of a sniff. A couple of half chances here and there, but we really struggled. The build-up, I felt, in the first third and a half, or I guess you would just say half if you're talking about a third and a half, was okay. Working out of the defence, beating the first press and getting towards, you know, getting the ball out to Rodri and Kovacic in advanced positions. But after that, Jesus Christ, it was impotent, wasn't it? We had no ideas whether we were trying to force our way through with our runners, with Foden, or I think even Rodri had a run at the back line once or twice. De Bruyne's signature crosses weren't getting anywhere. There were times when it was just a scramble. It was a scrum on the edge of the area because Arsenal were crowding around us so heavily. Really frustrating, wasn't it? I can't really recall any absolute clear chances where you're thinking, yeah, that was the pivotal moment. That was when we should have put the ball away. I don't think many of them even happened.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think of big chances, to be fair. Obviously, there was the Ake one, but to be fair to Ake, he did see it at the very last second, crowded corner situation. But yeah, in terms of up in the usual attackers that you'd think of to be taking those chances, there wasn't a huge deal. Obviously, yeah, I think Kovacic had that shot that just whistled past the post early in the first half. I think Grealish had an attempt, but yeah, it was really frustrating. And I think, yeah, it going back to Arsenal's approach, really, it's it kind of felt more like one of those games where, not to have a dig at any teams, but we know the games, you know, from a few years ago, like Stoke at home or Burnley at the Etihad, or the kind of games where City have 75% possession. It's just about, you know, patience, trying to find a way through. But I guess the difference is when those teams come to the Etihad and do it, you know, there's a reason why they're not the top teams. They're not like an amazing defensive unit. Whereas this was Arsenal. And okay, some people didn't expect them to come and just really basically defend for a lot of the time. But they do have the best defense in the league. And they show today that isn't just because they're a team that keeps the ball a lot like City and attack is the best form of defence. They do have good defenders, which is not something that's always been said about Arsenal in recent years. People have accused them of having a bit of a soft underbelly, but I think that's really improved this season. And yeah, it was frustrating. I think from City's point of view, I think in the first half, it was pretty clear that Arsenal were prepared to let City's, well, I say full-backs, obviously they are centre-backs by trade, but the left-back and right-back today in the first half for a bit anyway was Vardiol on the left and Akanji on the right. And Arsenal were pretty happy just to let them basically just be open all the time. The ball goes out to them. And then the centre of the pitch where you've got Foden, De Bruyne, Bernardo, Rodri, Kovacic, like they just packed the centre of the pitch so much that, you know, it was impossible to find little chinks in the armour, little spaces to run into. For maybe there were, it looked like City had found a way in the second half. I remember Rico Lewis, who I thought was pretty good when he came on. He did that little roulette to win the ball. And then he wanted a give and go. I think he gave it to De Bruyne and then he made the run in behind the defence and never received the ball, never came to him. And he looked pretty frustrated with that. I thought that was going to be a moment they found the way in behind, but it wasn't to be. And then, you know, when Guardiola did go to change something, he brought on Grealish and Doku. So, you know, we've got two sort of two wingers rather than playing with the fullbacks high. And then, so when he did that, then Arsenal just went to a back six. So the middle wasn't quite as congested, but there just was no room. Every time Grealish got the ball on the left, there was two defenders going to him. Same with Doku on the other side. So, yeah, it's just one of those where City have played that home game so many times against lesser opponents than Arsenal, and eventually they find a way through. But when a team as good as Arsenal with as good quality players as Arsenal do it, you're not necessarily going to find that way through. And then there is more of a risk on the counter-attack, which they nearly found out. So, I don't know. I just don't really, I can't really put my finger on what more City could have done. I mean, it just came back to what we said at the top of the show, really. Like, it's that, it was the kind of game where if De Bruyne pulls a bit of brilliance out of his hat and smashes one in from the edge of the box, or if Haaland bullies his way past a few defenders and sticks it in, then we're not really having this conversation. Then it's a conversation about, we were just about plugging away and eventually we got the goal. But because that quality didn't come, and, you know, that extra percent that you need maybe in these situations wasn't there, we ended up just with a bit of a dull, frustrating afternoon. So I don't know. I'm not sure if there was any, for me anyway, I'm not sure there was any major, why did Guardiola not do this, or why did City not do this? I think it was just, in these games, you need that quality, that extra little bit that City have, but today just didn't seem to have.
All right, a couple of talking points off the back of that. Firstly, I think you make a really good, really important point, actually, and one that Arsenal do need some credit for, which is that City are used to playing against teams that are incredibly negative, and we have become, you know, we've become masters of breaking through that, of finding a way, and Arsenal prevented us from doing that. So there's some credit to them. Absolutely. As I said again at the top of the show, it is disappointing that that's how they played, but it worked for them, and they were short of one smash and grab goal away from what would have been a quite a historic result for them. But a couple of talking points then. First one, it was very, very congested in the middle before Pep made the changes. And the way that I've seen City evolve this season in terms of personnel is that Kevin De Bruyne is, and has been for many years, a specialist at exploiting space in behind a defence for attackers. Well, whether it is in behind a defence or whether it's in a tight spot, you know, pulling it back from the byline or flinging in these magical outswinging crosses. But Kevin De Bruyne works best when there is space to work the ball. Phil Foden works best, or is at least our best asset, when there is a congested central area of the pitch. We're struggling for space. We're struggling to perhaps draw defenders out to give another player, Haaland, for example, some space to work. Talking point number one is, should the switch have been different? Should we have perhaps taken De Bruyne off and move Foden central and put Grealish and Doku on the wings? Something, just an observation that I felt, really we weren't using the very best of Foden, and De Bruyne just wasn't perhaps best suited to the dynamic of the game today. The second talking point is Doku. I have, for a long time and for a while as well on this show, always been a massive proponent of giving these players time. I did it for Grealish, I did it for Calvin Phillips, did it for Doku earlier in the season. My thinking has always been that you'll never really know until the second season comes around. I think I'm changing on Doku. What I've seen from him, I think he is an electric player on the ball. He's got unbelievable talent and ability, dribbling talent, pace, strength. But the final ball, whether it's a shot, you know, a chance, a half chance, putting somebody through, making a cross, whatever it is, he just seems to make the wrong decision. And even when he does make the right decision, he can't pull it off. I'm starting to doubt his suitability at this level that we need. I don't know if I'm being overly pessimistic. I have always given players that year of settling in under Pep, but I just really don't like what I've seen from him. I'm going to stop short of repeating some of the abuse that he's getting on Twitter, that he's dog shit, he's crap, he shouldn't be near this squad, shouldn't be near this team. I'm going to pull short of saying anything like that, but I'm really starting to have my doubts. So, your thoughts on those two talking points? Foden and De Bruyne, who should have been central when we did have a congested middle of the pitch? And what the hell is going on with Doku? And why does he keep getting on the pitch as well?
So I guess with Foden and De Bruyne, I think I probably would have liked to have seen Foden stay stay on and De Bruyne go off. But yeah, it's just, but then on the other hand, it's like, it's with De Bruyne. As we've said, it was the kind of game where it just, they just needed a bit, that moment of magic. And obviously Foden is, you know, he's provided a few moments of magic this season, but is there anyone better for that than De Bruyne? I don't think there is, probably in the whole Premier League, to just pull off an inch-perfect cross despite the box being congested, or that perfect weight of pass to play from someone through on goal. So I can understand why Guardiola decided to keep him on, but I think I probably agree that, yeah, obviously Foden is better in the tight spaces than De Bruyne is, and there wasn't really the space for De Bruyne to run into or pass into that he loves to do, and that's sort of when he's at his best. So I think I would have liked to have seen Foden move into sort of, yeah, just move. Obviously, in the first half, he was playing kind of centrally because Vardiol was high on the left. But yeah, second half, I would have liked to see Foden just staying in the centre and, you know, Doku on the right and Grealish on the left. Which brings us on to Jeremy Doku. Yeah, I don't know. I'm in the same boat as you, as that I never, yeah. I'd be reluctant to make any sort of sweeping statements about him or judge, you know, if he's going to work at City or if he's going to get better or if he's not good enough. But I think, yeah, it will need to see a lot more next season in terms of quality of his final ball. But it's just a bit of an odd one because I feel like there has been games this season where his decision making has been good. And his quality has been good on his final delivery, but there's been far too many instances of him getting in good positions and then producing a poor cross. Or, you know, we had a few shots today, like he cut in twice and one he completely shanked it wide. And one was a fairly sort of tame effort, I think. But yeah, I don't know. I don't think he's like the quality of player that would, you know, is going to demand a regular space in the team. But I wouldn't necessarily say he can't become that player. But, and I guess a caveat also is that there was an acceptance at City that when they signed him, like, you know, he is an incredibly raw talent. I think he's probably featured more than was the original plan. But not that, you know, I don't know. But then when you've got Oscar Bob who on the bench, who, you know, obviously is a lot more inexperienced at top senior level football than Doku is. But then he does seem to be technically a bit better, a bit more reliable with his delivery and whatnot. So it's a tricky one. But I think I'm willing to give Doku the benefit of the doubt. But I think, you know, there does need to be a marked improvement in his decision making and his final ball quality. Otherwise, there's just no way that Guardiola's going to keep putting faith in him. Or, yeah, it's all well and good bringing someone on to inject a bit of dynamism and pace like he did today. But then when it's a game like that, when there isn't too much space to run into, when you do get the half yard, which he did do on a couple of occasions, then the final ball has to be right. And it just wasn't today. So it's definitely something to keep an eye on. And hopefully we'll see, you know, I mean, I'm fully rooting for him. Hopefully we see massive, like a big improvement for him next season. But yeah, I think I'm going to stay politically in the middle of the fence. Yeah.
Yeah. Look, I'll always back a player that pulls on a blue shirt. There's no doubt about that. And I do hope that we see a different Doku next season. But for as long as we have big games for the rest of this season, which, until we're mathematically out of the title race, is the case, I don't want to see him. I think the frustration almost doubles up as well because we've seen some great stuff from Cole Palmer this season over at Chelsea. He's gone, Doku's come in, and Doku is probably getting an amount of minutes that Cole Palmer might have been happy to stay for. So, look, maybe the less said about that right now, the better, because that's a whole other conversation. It's a whole other podcast episode, but one, again, maybe just one to think about. I did want to cover Haaland, but we're running out of time. Maybe one to give the lads a nudge on for the episode tomorrow, listeners, Tuesday. There's going to be another one just on a few more talking points, so tune into that one. I want to end on a positive, though, Alex. There were a few positives. So shout-outs I want to give here. a bit of a makeshift defence up against the most potent attack in the league this season. Clean sheet, great. That includes Ortega, of course. I think one dodgy looking pass in the first half, but otherwise quite solid. Guardiola, I thought the best of him was on display today with regards to his dribbling. You know, when he joined, we were looking at some of his numbers and his stats, and he had dribbling stats compared, you know, that were comparable to some of the best wingers in Europe. So I think we saw some good stuff from him today. Rico, I thought, came on and was excellent. Unfortunately, not at the kind of minutes this season that he did last season, but he was wonderful. I thought he did really, really well. Who else? Grealish, good to see him back. His head looked like it was back in the game. He offered something different, and he just makes us so much more effective in retaining and recycling possession in dangerous areas. So really pleased to see him back. And finally, my last shout out goes to Kovacic. Again, a couple of dodgy moments. I think sold Diaz short on one back pass today, but otherwise, again, he was good. He was solid. He did what he was asked to do. And you know, again, I think the problems were further up the pitch. So really, the back six for me today was an overwhelming positive. So your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it was Arsenal's press made it quite difficult to for City to build up in the usual way. And obviously the absences of Stones and Walker didn't help with that. But I thought Kovacic was, I really quite did like it when Kovacic was dropping back. But he changed a few times, I guess, before Ake went off. Ake was effectively, when City were building, Kovacic was the centre-back and Ake was further forward. And then the same in the second half with Kovacic dropping back and Akanji moving up. But yeah, I thought Kovacic, I was surprised actually when he went off, because I thought he was the guy that on the occasions when he didn't drop back, I thought the City struggled. There was like a 10-minute period in the second half where City could barely just sort of keep it when trying to get out of their own penalty, like sort of third of the pitch. So I was surprised that he went off, but yeah, I would agree with that. I think the in general the defense was good. Yeah, Ortega in general, I think the distribution was decent. And yeah, but I thought Kovacic I was really impressed with, and I think if you know, it depends how Stones is, I guess, but I think in the upcoming games, Kovacic could be really important, particularly against Real Madrid in the Champions League. When sort of building from the back and keeping hold of the ball. So I thought he had a decent game.
Any others before we go? We do want to end on a positive note, even though today was kind of overwhelmingly underwhelming. So yeah, any other positives to shout out before we get off?
It's just hard, isn't it, when it was such a...
Positives only. Kind of let's end on a good game. Note. We'll just moan for a good 25 vibes. Minutes.
Rico Lewis. I thought Rico was... Not just the fact that he was tidy in possession like he usually is, that he... You know, obviously played a good role in keeping the ball moving in the middle, but the fact that he came into such a big game, and yes, okay, it wasn't the same as if he'd come in halfway through a game against Liverpool where it's frantic and it's end to end and he's coming into a basketball match. It was a lot more, City had a lot more control. So, but I think, you know, it's still a big game. Obviously he's used to big games now, but I thought it was impressive that he came in midway through the first half and kind of looked like he'd been, you know, he was in the starting 11. I thought that was really impressive. And I think, you know, but as we've, like, you know, he's not played too much football recently either. So I think that's a good sign as well. And I think, I don't know, I saw on, so I was watching on TV today, and I think I saw, they looked like there was an incident where Diaz was like, not having a go at him, but, you know, giving him a bit of a lecture about something that he didn't do quite right, or he wanted him to move into a position to open up a passing lane a bit more. So I think that was good. And Rico wasn't having a moan back or anything. So his attitude is, you know, yes, he's not played much football recently, not as anywhere near as much as I'm sure he'd like to play, but he's, when he gets the opportunity, is performing well, and he's still taking on lessons from his more sort of experienced teammates. So I think that's another sign of the great things to come from Rico Lewis, and hopefully can carry on performing well and maybe even play, you know, sort of kick on and become more of a regular fixture in the first team next season or in the rest of this season, like we saw at times last year.
Perfect. There we go. Even when we're down, we can think of a few silver linings to find. And that's probably a good place to finish off. Listeners, as I said, there will be more talking points on the Arsenal game to come tomorrow. So, as always, leave us a review, or as Booker says, unless it's shit, don't bother. But leave us a review, drop us a follow on whatever platform you're listening to. And yeah, not really too much else to say on that one right now. But hopefully, you know, we've got Villa in the week, and then Champions League quarterfinals coming up over the next couple of weeks. So hopefully some more positive episodes to come. I've been your host, Ollie Kirsch. Alex, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. Pleasure as always.
Thank you. And listeners, thank you. This has been the City Report podcast. We'll catch you next.
Make sure you're geared up for Man City's end of season running with McDelivery. Great food delivered right to your door. By using McDelivery, you won't miss a moment of City's crucial running. And just like Kevin De Bruyne, they deliver your order exactly where you want it. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. Are you in? At participating restaurants only, 18 and plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.